Hello and welcome to 100% Real with Ruby. Today I finally have Mike Dohler on and I am so excited to have him on. He's another goat in the nutrition space in, well, I guess because he's been doing this for so long and it's not done out of a pursuit of profits, but a pursuit of passion, and the profits just ended up being a side effect. And because of that, he gives advice to anyone, everyone, and tries to help people become their best, to break through their limiting beliefs. Because in a world of hormone specialists and gurus on carbs and menstrual cycles and all this other bullshit, and menopause, you need these special things, and PCOS, you need these special things, he sort of dilates it down to the basics, not dismissing the things you're struggling with, because they are very real. And it might mean you need to be a lot more intentful, but they aren't the things that are stopping you from getting anywhere. And I guess this is kind of what I wanted to introduce the podcast with, because as someone who has spent the majority of his life teaching people about nutrition, to then have people say tracking is obsessive, tracking is disordered, and then going into this whole extreme of body positivity and just this, that, the other, you don't have to be so meticulous with all these other things. I would say that the most obsessive thing is wondering why you aren't where you are yet, despite all the hard work that you're doing, complaining about your belly rolls. So with that, I'm going to let you give a little spiel about yourself and kind of introduce the podcast with that very factor.
Yeah, thanks, Ruby, for having me. My name is Mike Dohler. Started a company in 2015 called Stronger You. Grew that thing to we reached about 50,000 clients in 50 different countries. Had a staff of nearly 100 RDs and coaches, PhDs, all kinds of different fun departments. Helped a ton of people with the basics. Again, like you said, we acknowledge all the challenges and we work around them. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the calories we're eating and the calories we're expending and the behaviors and the situations in life that influence that to go the right way or the wrong way. So we did that for about 7 years. I ended up selling the company. My wife and I had some kids and I decided to hang it up and officially retire. But I still love talking about this stuff. So yeah, thank you so much for having me on this. And I'm happy to rant. I am well known for keeping it real and to the basics, and I probably repeat myself a lot because there's not that much to say about this stuff. Like, we can talk about this stuff for 10 hours, but the reasons people struggle are always the same, and we've seen it thousands of times. And that's what I love to talk about, because I think the biggest challenge for most people who are struggling with this fat loss and fitness thing is they're just not aware of what's happening. And they live in a world that isn't easy to make the right things happen. So that's where I like to play pretty much like a nutrition strategist, trying to figure out this stuff for people, because I know how good they're going to feel when they do it. So it's like infectious to keep doing it, you know?
I actually love that word you just said, feel. You don't know how good you can feel until you feel great. And I have this like little analogy thing where it's just like you're living life on volume 8, thinking that you're living your best life, but you've never actually knew there was a level 9, a level 10 on the dial, because you think that that is where you're comfortable. That's all you know. And like you said, strategist, nutrition is simple. Calorie deficit, do these things. But somewhere along the way, we are humans, we have emotions, we have kids, we have jobs. We are unaware of so many things, but the part that I love that you like ranting, because the part that kind of trips most people up, especially in Facebook groups, which I know you're well known for, because that's kind of how it started, but people just throw shit out there and they parrot what everyone else hears that seems like it holds some value, and then other people believe it. And then there's this mythical sugar. Well, not mythical. We know sugar exists, but sugar's keeping us fat. It's the carbs. Especially if it's your hormones, you know, you just stay away from the sugar. Maybe you should like shine some light on the little nuances around sugar and carbs and bring it back to basics.
Right. And I say this a lot, and it's funny because when people think of sugar and carbs, I usually ask them because they'll say, oh, Mike, it's the sugar, it's the carbs. It always gets me. And I say, well, what foods are you thinking of? And it's not necessarily carbs or even just sugar, like jelly beans or gummy bears. It's usually the fats and the carbs together. In other words, it's the highly palatable, delicious snack slash treat foods that are everywhere nowadays. So it's partly to blame on carbs and sugar and these easy to consume calories, but it's not, it doesn't make them inherently bad. And that's the big thing I want people to realize is they don't have to worry about carbs or sugar. They just have to monitor how many calories they're eating or how many grams of these things they're consuming. Like, obviously you don't want people drinking soda and Kool-Aid and all that stuff all day. But if somebody really enjoys something like that and it's a part of, you know, their friends and their family and their community and their kid wants some jelly beans here and there, like, I don't want people to fear that. And that's one of those things I see in a lot of parenting circles now. Like, there's even some like popular business influencers that are like trying to take down big cereal, saying it's poison. It's like, it's not. There's a lot of people who have to give their kids cereal because it's cheap and it's quick. And there's a lot of people that have shame around food or superiority complexes around eating what they think is healthy. And I just love to help people identify their own BS stories in their head about these things and help them realize what's actually happening. It's like, yeah, you can overeat this stuff pretty easily, but just because you have some of it doesn't mean you're a bad person or you're going to hold on to body fat or be unhealthy or anything like that.
I love that because we don't eat calories, we eat food. Mm-hmm. And it's not that there's good and bad food. It's that, how is this food going to make you feel? How is this going to then impact your next actions? Are you going to start craving more, quote unquote, sugar? Are you going to start craving more food because it never satisfied you? It's becoming aware of these things. But what do you notice when you're playing detective, when people say their metabolism is slow and the deficit doesn't work? Well, they've been trying to lose weight for years. How do you go about that with your little magnifying lens?
Yeah, my little detective magnifying glass. Well, first, I always get a lot of pushback because a lot of the metabolism talk is usually in not in the male space, right? It's in the women of certain ages and situations in life, maybe going through menopause or something like that. So metabolisms are often blamed for why people aren't losing weight, but people aren't necessarily looking at the changes in lifestyle behavior that are encouraged because of these changes in terms of maybe reduced sleep, more hunger, fat deposits going to different parts of the body where it used to not go, which I think is a big thing we don't talk enough about. So when people say, oh my God, I'm gaining all this weight, it's like, well, maybe you had that same level of body fat. It's just in different places now. So it's more noticeable because it's new and fresh to you. So I don't want to diminish the reasons the caloric deficit is hard to achieve, but I also don't want to give people permission to not believe it because it still comes down to deficit. And if you're not losing fat, by definition, as annoying as I sound right now, you are not in a deficit for long enough. You could be in a deficit for many days a week, but there might be a few actions that are being taken that are pushing you out of that deficit into what I like to call accidental maintenance, the place where so many people are psychologically dieting. They feel like they're trying really hard, but they're getting nowhere. So they're not getting those physiological changes that they're seeking. And maybe it is because of menopause or age or whatever, but it's not because you're a certain age or you're in menopause. It's that when those things happen, they trigger lifestyle events like less movement, like I said, different sleep behaviors, hunger cues that you might not have seen before. Like when I used to coach a lot of people, we used to always know when we would ask our clients like, hey, when is your period? I know it's maybe a little weird to share with the dude coach, but it helps us understand what you might be going through with your diet. Maybe we can even, if we had someone track macros, maybe we could put them on protein and calories to make it a little easier because we know their hunger is going to be a little different or behaviors might make them feel a little different. So those are the things that we have to anticipate as coaches, and our clients and the people that are hoping to get better with food should anticipate these things. So I don't want people to give too much emphasis on why these things are happening. I want them to think about, like, okay, this is the reality. What can I do about it? And sometimes it's not a lot, but it is something. And that something might be enough to get you where you want to go.
I love that. And it kind of feeds off the podcast I did with Sam Forge not that long ago, in that, yeah, the dieting period for fat loss is not supposed to be sustainable, but the behaviors and the lifestyle that you create in the meantime, the identity, the fact that, which I think this is a quote from you, people are willing to yo-yo for 50 years of their life, but they can't give patience for a couple years of moving in the right direction. Do you want to live in living diet hell or diet purgatory, as I call it, mentally dieting, mentally restricting, never really enjoying life because you're trying to do it the sustainable way and not restrict yourself because this person says it's disordered? Or are you willing to just do the thing you need to do and get out again? But I guess we just get in our own way, which is why coaches exist. And I'm such a big fan of having a coach. Maybe you can also bring why that is so important when it comes into planning being really important versus winging it, anticipating things, bottlenecks, weekends.
Yeah, there's this thing called the Hawthorne effect where people act differently when they're being watched, which I think is the main reason why coaches work, is because someone has your best interest at heart and they're paying attention to what you're doing. So for example, if you're out there on your own trying to figure this stuff out, one, you have no accountability. There's no one that cares if you do well or not except yourself, which is living in a instant gratification world that isn't even your fault. It's, you're a human, you're programmed this way. So you're going to want to do the things that give you pleasure and help you in the moment versus later, because later might not come. In addition to that, the coaches are able to basically fast track knowledge and your own education as a client in a matter of a couple days, hours, weeks, and months. What it would take a normal person to know what we know and have the experiences we know could take a decade. So to get out of the way of all the confusion in this industry, which there is a ton, like, we run in pretty good circles. Like, our knowledge is pretty much in line with each other because we learn from the same people and we trust the nutritional science that isn't biased by some, I don't know, ridiculous biohacking community or whatever fad is on the rise.
With the shirt on.
Right. So when we think of our clients or our potential clients, we can't blame them for falling victim to all this stuff because they always create a victim. They always sell you the solution. They always have a ton of followers. Most of them look really good and healthy. So why wouldn't you follow them? So I can't blame the average person, but these people often just sell products and they're probably going to just disappear in a couple of years and take everybody's money. And that kind of sucks. So that's why I want people to work with coaches. That's why I think a lot of coaches work with coaches, because we don't want to think about this stuff all the time by ourselves. You know,
that I said this to someone the other day, that was perfect. People are always like, I don't think I can find the time to fit something else and I can't give it my full priority. And it's like, but we're here to help you through that. Because if you're just waiting for when things die down, you aren't going to last long because things are never going to stay that way. And the best time to start is the worst time to start, because that best time never comes.
And I'm glad you said that, because one of the things we used to see all the time is, oh, I have this trip or this work thing, or I have an ankle injury and I can't work out. So I'm going to either try to pause this thing or I'm going to do it later. And I said, well, then, like, straight up, like, do you think you would do better with us or by yourself? And, like, you can see, I mean, obviously it's like through text and stuff, so you can't see the gears turning in their head, but you know, they're turning in their head and they're like, yeah, I would do so much better if I stuck it out. So I often tell coaches that if somebody tries to bail on you or won't sign up because of that reason, it's another reason. That's not the reason, because when you uncover the truth and show them how accountable they can be with you versus without you, then they have to think of another reason not to be with you.
I reckon if you could just show someone a snow globe of what life could be like when they're feeling good, when they're actually in this place, they would realize that they would do everything they could do now to get to that place, and that it doesn't have to be as difficult. But it actually frustrates the hell out of me, because people make it seem like there are so many things we need to worry about, so many sacrifices we need to make. But then, because diets can show fast results temporarily, we're bred into this impatience. So we don't allow ourselves to even start to make gateway, because we think that we need to make massive changes to get any success. And if we fail the second day or the third day, this isn't working for me, there's no point in me staying with you anymore. And it's like, but we need to communicate. We need to work through what it is that is your sticking point, so you can stop struggling and starting over every single time.
Right. That's the funny thing is, like I mentioned in that one post, people will do crazy diets, yo-yo for their whole lives, instead of just doing the thing that seems a little bit slower. But it's like, that slower thing is the fast thing. It will take you maybe a couple months to do what you need to do, and then you'll learn from a lifetime. And I think a lot of people's hesitancy with it is they don't believe that it will work for them. Like, everyone thinks that, like, oh, that can't be me. And it's like, there is nothing in this world that has as high of a guaranteed return on investment as taking care of your nutrition. But people don't believe it's going to happen for them. It's like, we're all kind of the same with this stuff. If you get into the right zone, you're golden. You just have to chill and let it happen and trust the experts that are hired to help you.
And we never really see our own progress within ourselves, because change takes time. And especially if you tried a fad diet like keto before, yeah, okay, you probably saw fast weight loss, you probably saw fast results, but that is why you are where you are now, because it wasn't something that you could sustain and fit into your lifestyle. And everything has a level of trade-offs. And I'm sure you're even more aware of it now that you've become a parent. There are so many trade-offs you need to be willing to make, but also understanding that diets are not sustainable. They're not meant to be. Your lifestyle is. That's why when you invest yourself into building a better version of you, this is why I'm such a fan of strength training, because it gives you something else to focus on for the long term that you can build your body up through, and just let the diet guide you along like a track.
Right. I'm glad you say that about the sustainability of diets, because I say the same thing and I sometimes get pushback. And I tell people, like, the methods to lose the fat are not meant to be sustainable. If they were, you would starve yourself and you would die. That's obviously extreme. But what we want people to do is do the diet, lose the weight you want to lose, and then jump into maintenance and chill there. And that's the lifestyle. And I used to call it diet mode and lifestyle mode. Like, the way you have to live on diet mode is like, you're on. Like, you probably shouldn't mess around, because if you do mess around, you're just in that purgatory, like you said, for longer. So you might as well get out of diet mode, get into lifestyle mode, chill there, and live happily ever after. But people just kind of play in diet mode. Like, they go diet mode or reckless mode. They don't go to lifestyle. And that's what I want to change with people. But I understand, again, how difficult it is for people to basically identify with a person that's healthy, in shape, and trains. Like you said, if you're doing strength training, you have something to shoot for. If you're doing cardio just to lose fat, the only measure of success is if you're less fat. And that's not good enough for people. People need to strength train, because you can hit a PR every single time you go into the gym. It doesn't have to be more weight, could be more reps, could be anything. And that's like the wins that I think people aren't interested in finding. And I wish they would, because it's a game changer for people. The people that do the best lift weights, eat well, do cardio for health.
I kind of reflect back to the first time when I was using strength training as a way to burn energy, and I would do like 10 sets of like 20 reps on the squats as a warm-up before I get to my working sets, and never really progress there. And every single time I would be like, nah, I don't want to go to the gym. I hate it. I hate this. My body this, my body that. But when you start to shift for that whole reason of getting stronger, feeling confident, your whole life changes. And I think that's kind of similar to like the buffet effect, in that people, they pay a coach or whatever else, and they want to get the maximum benefit for that little piece of cash that they get, instead of starting where you're at, developing a baseline, so then you can enter this unsustainable period of time for a short period, and then transition into maintenance, practice maintenance. This whole thing is a practice.
Yep.
Why is it important to build structure with that thinking in mind?
If you don't have the structure, you're just going to yo-yo for the rest of your life. And that's what I think. What sucks to think about is there are definitely people who signed up for our program that just treated it as a diet and were just like, I'm going to lose the weight. And then they just did whatever they wanted to do. And it sucks because they have to do something again. And maybe they prefer that. I don't know. Maybe some people are okay with going hard and then just letting loose and gaining weight back and then redoing it. I don't think that's the best way to do it. But that's what I want people to just figure out, like, what is good enough for them. And I think what happens sometimes is people get very lean and then they think that they have to keep that. So I'm cool with, like, you know, I used to get people in Facebook groups that were like, should I do your program? I want to lose 3 to 5 pounds. I'm like, yeah, probably not. Like, we could teach you how to eat and be better at all that. But if you're just signing up to lose 3 to 5 pounds, I mean, you could probably just stop snacking for a couple days. Like, you don't need us for that.
Because people, I think this is one of your posts, people think that that last thing that they want is the thing that's going to make them happy. Whereas you need to start to bring things into your life that make you happy now. You need to accept where you are now so that you can work on being your best. Because it's not really that last 3 to 5 pounds people want. So many people say they just want to lose fat and build muscle at the same time. But that isn't going to get you any closer to where you want to be either, because number one, doing it that way, you never really get anywhere because you're always going to spin your wheels. But number two, what you want is to be more confident with your body. You want a tighter frame on you, which isn't going to come from just chasing diets and diets and diets.
Right. And a lot of people, I always say this, they want the numbers, if we're talking in pounds, always to end in 0 and 5. So it's like, is it the 3 pounds that you want to lose, or is it that losing 3 pounds will bring you to a number that's a 0 or a 5? And like, I used to love challenging people's thoughts, and, you know, I wasn't a jerk about it. I'd be really like chill about it. And they'd be like, yeah, you know, that does make sense. I haven't thought of it like that. And I think as coaches, that was one of the coolest things, is we could be the first people ever to introduce the new concept to someone. So like, even if coaches are listening, like, don't be afraid to post the same like concept as someone else. Like, that's, that basic stuff is helpful because someone that never saw it will probably see it. So don't think of like us posting it or us, what we're going to think, like, who cares? And I think I get in my head about that sometimes, because I'm like, oh, I have some basic information. Somebody else said it, but maybe not the people that follow me. Maybe they never saw it, you know?
And you always have your own unique twist on it. And yeah. I guess throwing a different spiel at that, because I feel like it's really important. The 80-20, people try to plan for the 80-20, where if you just think about your life, life gives you the 20%.
Right.
That's
the advice out there a lot of times, is like, oh, the 80-20, just be on 80% of the time, be off 20. But if you purposely try to be off 20, you're probably off 50%. So then it's a 50-50 plan. So I don't like telling people to do 80-20, because like you said, life happens and that's the 20. Someone, you leave home and you forget your lunch, or, you know, your spouse wants to eat at a different place and you want to enjoy. So there's your 20. If you plan for it, it's not going to be 20. It's going to be way more than 20. And then your caloric deficit is erased and your results are gone. So I just don't like these 80-20 things. I think it sets people up for failure. It's misleading.
Yeah, I hate it for that reason as well. But within that, it's like, but what do you define as 80-20? You need to realize that it means building up your insurance policy, as I like to call it, of eating your protein, getting your fruits and veggies, and filling your diet with mostly whole food, ending it with a dessert. you're still within your caloric range, which kind of brings me to the whole food tracking. It's a tedious chore that makes you obsess about food, or it's a total game changer if you want to actually lose weight without feeling like you're on a diet and right. do it in a way that you're not living in diet purgatory. And the thing I loved the most is, I don't know whether it was when I woke up this morning or it was before I went to sleep last night, but I saw Mike comment on someone's post saying, yeah, and it's never the carbs that people are overeating, it's the fats. And I'm like, it's not even that. It's, yeah, it's the fats. They add up really fast, but people are also not tracking the right. non-caloric PAM spray, which has a lot of calories for the amount that you're spraying on. The oil, the butter, the thing that you put on your bread. Like, it brings so much awareness, but oh no, it's obsessive.
Yeah, that's the big thing to me is, I'll say something kind of controversial right now. It's, I think the people, or a lot of people who are saying it's obsessive, are just using that as a reason not to try it or do it. And I think that if you do it, like you said, it is a game changer. It reveals potentially years of education in a matter of a couple days. You track food, you know what is up in a matter of a couple days versus maybe just guessing. I just don't understand what the apprehension is. I don't understand why everybody doesn't want to do it. It's not nearly as hard as you think. It's not learning another language. It's not learning to play guitar to the point where you'd be comfortable to get up at an open mic and riff. Like, you're just entering food and you're weighing it and measuring it and you're figuring out what the hell you were doing wrong all these years. And that's the issue that people have. They don't want to be wrong. They don't want to feel like amateurs. They don't want to do the thing that seems like it won't matter anyway. And it's like, how much more evidence do you guys need? Data ends all arguments. You don't have to wonder anymore when you start tracking. It just shows you the reality. And if you don't accept that, that's a problem you have to get over.
And the better you get at it, you don't have to be so meticulous with everything all the friggin' time because you understand food principles. Like when you're first starting out, your eating is sporadic. You have no structure. As you start to get into the lifestyle, you start to realize, hey, I like not having to think about 5 different MasterChef meals I need to eat in a day. I'll just eat the same similar meals. Yeah. And I guess it also, be aware of your personality type. Like, yeah, I am an obsessive person by nature, but it also saved me from my eating disorder because when I came out of it, I started tracking my food in terms of, I'm not eating enough to fuel my session. I'm feeling like crap. How can I now fuel myself? And I still feel like that to this day, 10 years later, that is how I'm fueling myself. And if you bring in that mindset, like my body is the perfect cake that I want to bake. I want to make sure that I'm giving it the nutrients that I need. I want to make sure that I'm nourishing it and giving it enough as fuel. But I feel like that a lot of people let themselves down because they've only ever used tracking as a means to lose weight, as a means to try to hit 1300 calories, which you never do. So you don't want to track all of the indulgences that you're doing because now you feel like a failure.
Yep.
And I guess this kind of comes to, I eat pretty healthy, but the scales are moving. But because I want to come back to this whole structure thing, why is structure so important then again here?
Yeah, in this way, when I think of structure regarding food, I used to call it structured flexibility. Like with the flexible diet, you could work in all kinds of different foods, but you still need to be structured because if you think you can just eat a cupcake for breakfast and still hit your macros or calories easily, you're mistaken. So the structure guides people to the right behaviors and educates them on those behaviors and what's in food in a way that makes achieving their goals so much easier. The structure with this way of eating is so important because the problem that many people had was they were just so reactionary with the way they ate. They'd be like, oh, I'm hungry, I'm going to eat something. Okay, well, what's around you? Or what can get to you in 25 minutes? Probably not something that's ideal for your diet. So with the structure, you're just like, all right, I need to hit a certain amount of protein. I need to hit a certain amount of calories. I'm going to do that in 4 meals and a snack. And then boom, you have it all set up. You're not going to obsess about it because it is already set up. There's no guesswork. The time you had to take to plan that out was a little lesson in food education. You might have wanted something that you realized, I don't know, maybe you wanted potatoes and you were like, oh, that might be a little more carb than I want for that meal. Let me have a salad instead. So there's just like this thing. It's like these lessons that people need to go through with the structure and the planning that unveil or unravel all the truths of food and their personality with it. And I just like, I want people to try it because it's so, it's like, I sound like the cult leader, right? It's like so rewarding to see that.
When you learn about what you're eating, it gives you the autonomy. And we know that the keys of motivation are autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And once you realize how much it's adding to your life, it buys you back your time. Because now you're not trying to find the next fad diet. You're going on another diet, thinking about why isn't this happening? Why isn't that happening? You're actually moving towards the life that you want to live, which kind of comes to this whole, like, you need to align your identity and figure out what progress means to you. So maybe you can talk a little about that.
Yeah, that's, I think a lot of people have unrealistic expectations of themselves. They want some maybe body that they saw on Instagram. Men and women both have this problem. The dudes might want to traditionally look like, you know, the wrestlers and the action heroes of the day. A lot of women think they need to look like a certain type of Instagram model. They see these people, they set expectations in their head that, oh, that probably takes like a year. It probably doesn't. It probably takes a lifetime for many people. There could be some chemical enhancements. There could be some surgeries. There could be some oils and lighting and camera tricks and Photoshop. So I think people's expectations need to be realigned with what is actually healthy and good and I don't know, like a desired look for themselves, not based on what society or these images make you think. You know, if you look back, I don't know, even like a few decades ago, what in shape was is much different than it is now. In shape now is it's unattainable for almost everyone. You see these Marvel action heroes, no one will ever look like that. Like only people that will look like that are the people that look like that. So I think you have to realign yourself and say, what am I actually okay with? And maybe that isn't a body goal. Maybe that's a performance goal. And I think more people that have performance goals end up eventually getting closer to their body goals because they have something to shoot for that's more tangible and more realistic. I think when I was in the best shape of my life, it was when I just wanted to get stronger. Because I didn't care how I looked, because I knew the body that could perform how I wanted it to perform by default had to look different because it needed more muscle. So that's what I think. I think people just need to start thinking about what's realistic and what's attainable and what people can do with their lifestyle, because they're not probably going to want to live in the gym or live, you know, just eating chicken and broccoli and crap like that. They have kids, they have families, they have jobs, they have all of these things that maybe some other people don't have. And that's where I think they just have to think of this stuff a little differently.
Yeah, and that's exactly the identity shift. And I know there's a research paper that says that you actually triple your results plus more when you're not focusing on the weight loss outcome, but you're focusing on the performance goals outside of that. And I would also say, because this is something that honestly triggers me in Facebook groups, it's when I see people that are like stage lean or they're competitors or they did some 8-week shred and you see this massive change and then everyone is commenting, liking, how do you do that? What's your diet plan? What's your training plan? Who's your coach? This, that, and the other. But someone who is living the life, a sustainable lifestyle, doing things the right way, they get maybe a few likes. They don't get as much attention. Yeah. And it's like just insane. And I would say more people have disordered eating out there and body image disorder than you realize. It's just that you're only seeing pixels on a screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of the people that get to that body are pretty messed up at times. I think if you could get in the head of a lot of these people who are idolized by many of our potential clients, you would realize they're maybe not healthy. They're not happy. they just look a way that society has said is attractive. And that's all.
As someone who's got on stage so many times thinking that that was the answer, I was pretty messed up. And now that I'm on the other side, I really can feel the difference of not holding myself to that. And it doesn't align with my values to ever get on stage again. As much as I like, well, as much as people say you should get on stage, I'm like, but I can't see that aligning with my values. I can't see myself having the same trade-offs and wanting to risk all the work that I've done on my body image to get to this place where I actually like my body and I'm loving the journey and enjoying every part of it, to just go back to that hole where I'm struggling to make it to my sessions. And I don't think people realize the cost of getting to these areas, especially if you're trying to get there without much time in the gym when you don't even have the muscle mass or the metabolic capacity because you've just dieted your whole life.
Yeah, I used to try to talk people out of it. If they're like, "Yeah, Mike, what do you think about me doing a figure show?" And I'm like, "I know you. I've seen how you've done on this just fat loss plan. I don't think you should subject yourself to that." I think a lot of people, when they get up on stage and they get those pictures, then a couple days later, they're a little bit puffed up. They are unhappy with their body and they wish it could look like it did on the stage. And it's like, you got to remember, this is an extreme sport. Like what you just did to achieve that, that was the race. You want to live in practice. You're not going to look like you did on race day. So I don't think a lot of people should even play that game.
Yeah. And I guess this also plays to the fact that our body image is not actually reality, because I was extremely lean 2 weeks after comp. And all I could say is I'm getting fluffy. I feel fat. I am fat. I'm getting too fat. But you look at the photos and I still have striations in my glutes. What does that tell you about body image?
It's messed up. The way we look at ourselves and talk to ourselves, it's messed up. And you could, if you were to post your pictures of when you thought you were fluffy to other people, they would have killed for that physique. And that's where we just... there's so much value placed on how people look. It's kind of crazy.
That's actually a really good idea. I should do that. Because I don't think people actually understand just how distorted our own image is if we don't step outside of it. And it's like, what are you doing this for in the end? Because if you want to feel confident, berating yourself isn't going to get you there. And maybe that's why you keep sabotaging with food. Maybe that's why you're struggling to ever feel like you're on track. But why is relationship with body and food so important here?
It's because society makes it this thing. I think that everyone is, I mean, it's such a factor in the world, how people look. So why wouldn't it be an issue? There's stats on people that look better make more money. They get more attention from the people they want to date. They get more respect. Like there's just, the world is set up in a way that makes it extremely superficial. So people know that they have to play that game. And it's one of those things. It's like, are we going to change the world or are we going to help people to feel a little bit better and fit in more? You know what I mean? This is like some social science expert question that needs to figure out why we strive so much to look like the people who dominate society. That's why everything, all the movie stars, all the musicians, everyone that's successful, like they're always talking about looks. So that just makes people chase that. And if you don't have that, you're a failure. Better luck next time. Do something else, right?
And it's always chasing the horizon because you never really get there, because then you're on to the next thing. Because as humans, that's where we find our happiness, in the pursuit. And if we get somewhere, we're never going to feel.
Right. And we know people, or maybe you were that person that was at peak conditioning. You were exactly what everyone would idolize, and it's still not good enough. I've been on the beach with some of the most jacked dudes, in shape, healthy, good looking dudes. And they're like, oh man, pinching their skin. And I'm like, what the fuck is, man, what's wrong with you? Like, right? Like, what do you, and like, if you speak like that as a coach, how do you think your clients think of themselves? So that's a little message. I had to say that to one of our coaches one time. He was posting a picture about, oh, I'm fat. I'm like, dude, you're actually jacked as hell. And you have a lot of clients who may think of themselves as fat that see you now and wonder what you think of them. So you might want to temper that language, you know?
Yeah, that like it never actually felt enough. But when you look back on the photos, yeah, it's just like, holy shit, I was in such great condition and I never appreciated that. And going back to the yo-yo, because people are still so willing to just spend the rest of their lives yo-yoing instead of actually dedicating, again, coming to a coach for more than a year, ditching the minimum contract period, ditching the whole like buffet effect of I'm paying this much, I want to get as much as I can in as short a period of time as possible. But a coach is quintessential in the game of not just what, not even weight loss. It's before the weight loss, because the weight loss is the unsustainable part, but you need to set your car up, not have it with one friggin' tire dinged in, the engine smoking, one of the doors broken off. Like, you need to fix the car to get it on the road first. That's what a coach is for. And then the car is on the road. And then we are guiding you like a GPS, like a roadmap to get to where you want to be. But then we need to make pit stops, and the coach needs to guide you, needs to be the tour guide. We don't just sell weight loss. We sell a better life so you can get out of the metaphorical car, the road, and start getting onto, I don't know whether you read the book. There's this book called Fully Engaged, where he made a distinction between a road and a path. The road is fixed. That's the diet. That's the way that I read it anyway, but it wasn't about that. That's the diet. But life is lived on the path, where you're creating your own path, you're weaving through all the fantastical things that are your life. That's how coaches work. They sell you that better life because that is what you want in the end. How do you get clients to see that more?
Man, it's the craziest thing, right? I'm just laughing because I used to use this example all the time. Like, you in life, you throw money at a lot of problems and you get something or you get a solution right away. Whether it's you go to the store and you buy food, cool, I have food. The landscaper comes, you pay him and he cuts your grass. The plumber comes, unclogs the pipes, cool. You give a coach money and it's like, you give us money and it's just a chance at success eventually after we have you do a lot of things, we get to know you, we set the foundation, and then let nature do what it does and shed body fat if you're in a deficit. So I understand why people are kind of weird about it. Let's just call it weird. They give us money and they're like, where are my results? Especially because not only in life is an exchange of money like a you get something immediately, but in many of the diet worlds, you either get like a book, so you have something tangible, you download some fancy app, so you feel like you're getting something, or you're on a crash diet that just sheds water weight immediately, so you get that result. So we used to just slow people down. We used to talk about like the previous baggage of all these other diets, how this is not the same, because a lot of people were maybe coming from low carb crash diets, so they were losing water weight instantly. Maybe on our plans, they can lose a little bit as well, but we had to temper their emotions because they all wanted to just shed the 20 pounds right away. And that's why I was such a like maniac about response times, because I knew that. So when somebody would sign up and pay us through our portal, they wanted to get hooked up with a coach immediately, because in their head, every moment that they weren't with a coach was a moment they weren't seeing progress, which we know is absolutely ridiculous, but that's how people think of it. So coaches like us, we have to think about, what are the behaviors of these humans? They want it now. Everybody wants it now. Blame Jeff Bezos, right? Amazon, anything we want, we could have it by tomorrow probably. And coaching is no different, and fat loss is no different. So we have to acknowledge that, I think, is a big step. And then just be honest and realistic with people and give them little wins along the way in terms of education and ability. Like, oh, cool, you could track now? You just planned a whole day? Like, you couldn't do that before. that's progress to people. I think if people want instant gratification, they have to look at how they feel when they're making the right choices on these plans, not just the results they're getting.
I always make a face when you say the word feel, because it's what I'm all about in my own coaching as well. It's like, I don't usually ask for weigh-ins. I try to get people off the scale for at least 6 months because of the fact that they've let a scale dictate their life, their actions for years. What is it going to be like when you start to tune into how you feel, the things you can chase, what you can do in the gym for at least 6 months? I have some that don't even want the scale again because they're feeling better again. It's like, track the inputs. As soon as you get the inputs on track, the scale will look after itself without you needing to dig out the seed to see if things are happening.
Yeah. I was a fan of the scale. I was a fan of changing people's relationship with it and using it as another data point. But I do understand that some people get a little crazy about it and we're like, all right, throw this thing in the closet. Like, forget
that whole numbers thing. Like, people just have this thing with numbers and it's crazy.
Yeah.
And talking about that whole investment thing as well, I finally, as of yesterday, got my house settled. I'm so excited. But in 2018 was when I wanted to get that. If I just threw money at whatever the hell, I would have all this debt to pay. I probably would, you know, probably just not existing. You need to be willing, just like saving up for a mortgage, saving up for a house. It's small investments over time that get you to that end goal. And then you can finally live in the life that you want to live. And it's like, not all of a sudden with the body that you want. It's like, not all of a sudden you're just going to wake up and poof, 3 years later, you're finally living the life and the body that you want. It's not like nothing happens in 3 years. It's just that it's going to take at least 3 years to start to see some amazing physique show. But within that period of time, everything is accumulating. You're getting healthier habits. You're building more muscle. You're losing some body fat. Like, you are in the process of getting to that 3 year place. It's just that the body you say that you want in 1 year is probably 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. It's just like school. Like, somebody goes to college, like, you're not graduating in 2 months. You're not doing it. And if you did get a degree in 2 months, somehow you didn't learn anything. So think of it like that. Those crash diets that are getting you down however many pounds in a couple months, you didn't learn crap. You're just, it's worthless. Treat this stuff more like college. Keep showing up, study, do what you got to do. And then you're going to be in a good place. You're going to have the knowledge and you're going to have the degree. And then when you leave, you're going to have the good life.
And you don't have to do, like, college was really stressful. College, you had to put in a lot of work, a lot of study hours. You had to do the exams, all the pressure. But now that you've done all the learning, kind of like tracking, you still need to apply that knowledge. You still need to use that knowledge. You're using it every single day. Sometimes you might need to study up a little bit more, but you don't do the same things that you do in college with all the tedious degrees. It's just like, you put yourself through that to get to the other side. And something I want you to kind of, like, especially end this on, is talking about how we can adapt our level of eating, our level of normal, our level of being to a new normal and be okay with the sacrifices, especially now that you've become a parent yourself. I'm sure that there are a lot of things that you realize that don't come as easy. Doesn't mean they're not possible, because anything is possible if you make it. How do we fit this into our lifestyles so that we can get to our goals of fat loss, of living lean and strong and healthy for life?
It's the trade-offs. It's, what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to accept? What are you willing to change? And those things, in some cases, could be major upheavals of your current life. But most of the time, they're not. Most of the time, they're just a little, few little things. Some of it could just be reducing the alcohol you drink nightly, or reducing the steak you eat and replacing it with chicken because it's lower calorie. Or if you want to go out all the time to eat with your kids, maybe you can learn to cook at home with them and they can help you. So I think that's the biggest thing, is everybody thinks it's going to have to be someone else living your life and you being this new person. And it doesn't always take that. Most of the time it doesn't. Most of the time it's a few little things that you can do for the rest of your life. And that might sound intimidating, but it's not, because you're going to have a longer life if you do these things. You're going to be a happier person longer. You're not going to be as stressed. You're going to be more confident. And that's where I think people need to identify what actually can change themselves, and then how to do it. And it's not that difficult. I think we just, we have a problem with, we want it all, right? We want all the pleasures that food gives us. We want all the pleasures of sitting on our butt. We want all the pleasures of being in the body that we want. And we can't have those things. There's a Venn diagram in there where there's some carryover, and you have to identify what you're willing to give up and what kind of person you want to be.
I really love that. And because I know that you do have so many things that you riff on about, and there are some things that just stick out to you, I kind of want to have you, alcohol is one of them that is taking a major leap where people are now bringing up alcohol. So maybe start with that. But what are some other things that you could riff on about that are spoken about too much, either in a that is so wrong way, or yeah, this needs to be shouted out to another audience, to a wider audience?
I think, like, I'm kind of known for like canceling snacks. Like, I think most adults shouldn't snack. I just think, and here's why. Well, so you get me all wound up, because I think, so here's the thing. People are like, I need to snack. I'm hungry. It's like, okay, well, if you're hungry, maybe you didn't eat a filling meal. Maybe you lacked protein and fiber in that meal. Maybe you should add some of that before you add a snack. Secondly, snacks are often, basically never are they protein or fiber. They're usually just delicious carbs and fat in some concoction, right? Some people will argue with me and say, oh, well, I snack on carrot sticks. Well, Mary or John or whoever you are, you snack on carrot sticks today. You probably will not snack on carrot sticks a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Those carrot sticks are going to turn into pretzels, potato chips, chocolate, and other things, which are extremely high calorie. So if you want to make this fat loss thing easy, just entertain the idea of eliminating snacking. Because most snacks, it's the behavior. It's not just the food choice. It's the behavior that you're always just munching. And what's the problem many of our clients face? They mindlessly eat, and then they tell us, I hardly even eat anything. Well, you hardly eat anything that you're aware of. You realize calories come from anything you're putting in your mouth. It's not just when you're sitting down for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. If you're snacking, you're probably eating a lot of calories that aren't doing yourself any favor. It's just a moment of pleasure for maybe a lifetime of pain. And I think it should be on the chopping block for almost every adult.
Thank you. I hate snacks. I hate it. I'm on the same thing as you. And you'll be amazed just how much more satisfied you'll feel when you eat bigger meals, because that grazing isn't doing any good to you at all.
No. Get rid of it. Yep.
I say it's an excuse for overeating.
Yeah. It is. I think I could go on and on, but I just think, and that's the thing. Like, I got pushback so much. Like, in my group, people were like, cool, I'll try it. In random groups, they're like, oh, you're an idiot. I'm not going to stop snacking. I'm like, listen, I gave you a logical argument for it. You asked for help. If you don't want it, someone else will. I'll go talk to them.
That's why I'm trying to like wring more out of you on snacks, because it is actually ridiculous. Like, yeah, but what can I snack on that has more protein? If you put more protein into your meals, you wouldn't need protein in your snacks. That's why I'm like, have a dessert at the end of the night. Just fill your day with wholesome meals.
And think about that question. What is a snack that's protein? There really aren't any, because proteins are usually meats, dairy, egg whites. That's not really snack food. Snack food is usually crunchy, comes from a package, and is relatively cheap. Protein is a more expensive macronutrient. So you could argue there's like beef jerky and maybe like a thing of Greek yogurt, but that's not what people are looking for. P- people want to reach in a bag and get protein, and it's not happening.
Yeah. So schedule your meals. And this is, again, where scheduling comes in and planning comes in. Schedule and plan your meals and allow for a dessert where you're not just mindlessly snacking throughout the day, where you're planning the dessert so that it fits your goals, because it is so much easier to end your night with something sweet, brush your teeth, and then get on with your night than it is to just leave the door open of, I feel like a little more.
I'm laughing because I do it every night. My wife is like an awesome home baker, and we every single night pretty much have something. And it's just, I allocate for it. I don't gain weight. I don't ruin my health. I'm in a good place and I get to enjoy. So I just make it count. I don't do that all day.
I fucking love this whole podcast. Yeah. It's just been amazing. And we ended it on such a high note. And I'm really hoping that the audience takes a lot from this. And it's why I'm calling it a nutrition strategy that actually makes sense, because everything here is broken down in such clear details that you can start implementing some stuff today. Try the no snacking thing, try the planning thing, and try the, okay, let's just get into this diet and track all the shit and then get myself out of it so I can live my life with my kids and have fun with the monstrosities.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Pretty much. Is there anything else that you wanted to like sum this up with? Plug your stuff. Obviously, Mike Dola is going to have his Instagram handle below. I really actually suggest that you follow his stories as well. He shares some pretty good stuff. Every time I open his stories, there's something I'm like, yep, that's it there. Yeah. But anything else?
Yeah, no, that's it. Mike Dola at Instagram. My buddy Jeb and I are starting a podcast of our own, so that'll be fun. You know Jeb.
I love Jeb. Oh, yes. Yep. That's going
to
be good.
So we'll just riff on a very variety of topics. Try to get a little deeper and talk about life outside of food. Just have a good time. Give me something to do.
That's really important. Yeah. That's going to be like the takeaway from this, and that focus on your life outside of food. Let food be a supplement for the life that you want to live. Learning the way to use food in a way that fuels you, makes you feel good, and gets you to the life in the body that you want to live healthy.
Yep. Perfect.
Yay. So if you like this podcast, please go and share it with a friend. You don't have to share it to your stories if that's something that's uncomfortable, but I do ask you to just share it with just one person today. See who you can help. And if you want to click the Spotify button and tap the 5-star rating, give it a review, and let us know what you gain from this podcast, because my favorite part is having people in my inbox saying that they learned something new, that something changed their mind on something that they kind of were tinkering on before. So with that, I will leave it here, and you will hear me on the next podcast.